Chabad, then I want you to put a smile on it. Okay. Today is July 21st, 2021, and a few wonderful young men who are sub-students of mine asked me a number of questions, and I felt I should record it because some of these questions have come in from others and might as well deal with them. We're here with different backgrounds. I come from YU, and you've been learning in Eretz Yisrael, right? And afterwards in Mir. But our love of Torah, I hope, is similar. The Major Tiloy changed the American situation drastically. It would have changed after World War II no matter what. But we're talking about 1922, September 1st, the Mejita arrived in America. What happened was very simple. What today became YU was then the only game in town. And Rabbanim were visiting from Europe, and every time Rabbanim came, it was to raise money. It was really, they would give drashot, but there was nothing serious. And their attitude towards Yeshivas Yisrael Chanan, which then was on the east side, well, it's an American institution. How much do these guys know? It was an attitude of beetle. All right, better than nothing, but from Zevet Avois Vaxen Goinim, das kann ich sein. So my cousin, Rabbi Revel, the founder of Torah in the United States, the first man to move the space. It's interesting, in the family, I'm sitting here. Shortly, I'll start my 63rd year of teaching Torah. If I would show the emails I get, how many lives I've influenced, how many Haredim remain from because of my shiurim, if you understand what I'm saying. The Rosh Yeshiva down the block, Reb David Cohen, is also a cousin of mine. We're all Calvariskis. So it's amazing. There's a certain gene in that family, Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Cohen, and Avdechem HaNeman. So he decided to bring an Odom Gadol to America. Reb Shlomo Palachek was the Reb Chaim Mabrisky used to talk about him, say, as a Madna Ili Habich Nish Gezen in my ganzen Leben. He was a unique Ili. He was if you want a story that I heard from the people involved, Rabbi Nathan Drazen, they were walking the Mechita from the subway to the yeshiva on East Broadway. He lived in Williamsburg. He took the subway, one stop in East Broadway, or two stop, whatever. And they approached the yeshiva, and it was a spring day, and all the kids are playing ball. And it's a famous story. His son-in-law published it in the Hakdama to Chidushei Ilim Mechit, Rabbi Goldberg. I knew all these people. So the Mechit said, look at these kids playing. Why didn't we play ball in our youth? We would have had a good youth, and we would be the same Talmidei Chachamim. And I heard later from members of his family who I became friendly with, his children and grandchildren. And actually, I was Masada Kedushin for his great-granddaughter married a Talmud of mine. I was Masada Kedushin here in Israel. So they told me that he really was part of his personality. He suffered because his father made him start learning never to waste a minute. He never played a game of ball. So he asked about baseball, and they showed him a box score. So the Mechita looks at the box score, let's say like the Yankees versus the Red Sox, and they look at him, they say, Rebbe, you understood? Du hast verstanden? He says, well, but I said, and he just repeated the whole box score, every name, the statistic, this was his mind. So he came to America. The reason he had to leave Europe, and I've written about this, Rekafet Aaron Chelik Aleph, I believe you'll see it. Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel said to him, when he visited America to raise funds about five years later, he said, "Why did you leave Europe? You would have been the Gadol Hadar." He said, "Doesn't matter, because of my hashkafas, I would have to live in America, even though I gave shurim in Europe." And what do I mean by that? He was a Mizrahiite. And he organized Teira V'Das in Lida. And that was the forerunner of Rabbi Revel. Everything that happened afterwards in America and in Israel, where we combined secular studies. You went to high school, you know core curriculum. You know that 2 and 2 is 22, not 4, you understand? You have a bit of an education. So he was a Mizrahiite. That's a story unto itself. Actually, I'm writing about it now, the most important work I've ever written in my life, according to my humble opinion. But
more than Washington?
No, this is more important, because I'm writing. This is a lifetime of learning and sources and hashkafa, and I'm showing how we all have to be good religious Zionists. That's the end result. And I bring many proofs. And the Rav Chamesh, I don't get into it. If I get into it, I'll talk for 2 years on it. It's not for now. So the major tip came to America. That boosted the whole standard of learning. I write about this in Revel. There was an alumni meeting of the YU graduates, and the tremendous table, the roaring 20s, food kedat hamelech, and the reporter for the Mugen Journal couldn't believe it. No one is eating. Yeshiva boys not eating. They were standing around the mechita, talking and learning in a sugyan yevamot. And until he finished, no one touched the food. The reporter, what was in this pile? That was the mechita. Ein mazal Yisrael. And he died young. He died of a gum infection that we cure today with one shot of penicillin. You know how I know? I had that same infection in Maplewood yet, going back to the 60s. Dr. Kansius, one shot, and I was cured. He died in 1928. He was about 55. So Dr. Revel was heartbroken. But they told him, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik wants to leave Europe. Reb Moshe is basically almost the same story as the Mechita. This is Reb Chaim's son, and he's teaching in a Mizrahi institution. Not only that, this was just published research recently. We heard rumors about it. We never had all the facts. He had a tremendous fight with, I could have just, oh, you know about it, over Das Teira. It appeared in Chakira, appeared here. He was very sharp. And his wife, who came from a much more open family, she was a Feinstein, Rebellia Pruzhana's daughter. She was a first cousin to Reb Moshe. And she encouraged him. We got him to go to America. Well, there were problems getting a visa, anti-Semitism by the American consul. He arrived in America December 1929, and she followed about 4 months later. And I need not tell you, that brought the Soloveitchiks to America. By now, Torah V'Das was trying to get on the map. But if you compare Torah V'Das to Yeshiva Shulchanan, there's no comparison. Here, Reb Chaim's son is teaching, and what does Torah V'Das have? So they turned to Europe, and they brought out Shlomo Hyman to America. Shlomo Hyman was the Talmud Muvhak of Reb Baruch Berlevovich. He was an Adam Gadol. What's interesting is he and Reb Moshe were like this. And once a month, he was younger, he would travel uptown from Brooklyn to YU already was uptown in Washington Heights to talk and learning with Reb Moshe. Once a month. And he put Torah Vadas on the map. I don't have to tell you some of the greatest Talmidim of Torah Vadas, all Talmidim of Shlomo Hyman. But Ein Mazal Yisrael, he too died young. And then the rest is history with Torah Vadas. We're talking about 45, 44. There was Machloikis. Torah Vadas has had infinitely more Machloikis than Shizchonin over the years. And what's unbelievable is that Torah Vadas today is only around because the Mechita came to America. Had the Mechita not come to America, the Soloveitchiks wouldn't come to America. Who's Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas today? Yitzi Lichtenstein, Reb Moshe's great-grandson. So it's fascinating how history works and how history intertwines. But the Mechita, there's no question, his coming was a red-letter day for the history of Torah. I would call it a golden day. Evan Hatashtit of what happens later in the United States. But you see, by the time the Rav starts teaching, and Reb Aaron, they both started teaching the same year, 41. Moriu Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, and Reb Aaron Kotler. By the time they start teaching, the foundation is there. And that's the Mechita.
So it's interesting that his lasting impact was really that he was nifter early.
Well, you mean because he brought the Soloveitchik family?
Right.
Yeah, there's something to that, but I would rather have him have lived a longer life. What's interesting is his own children, his two sons, one I knew very well. They were tzaddikim, but the one I knew very well was one of the top pulmonary doctors in America than in Israel, Hadassah, a Yiddish tzaddik. His brother was professor of mathematics, and one daughter married Rabbi Goldberg, who he put out the Mechita. He was a Talmud of the Mechita from the 20s in America. And the other daughter, who was Rabbi Revel's right-hand secretary, assistant, very capable, her husband became already a semi-conservative rabbi. That was Rabbi Mofshewitz of Queens. If it means anything to you outside the shul, it's called the Rabbi Mofshewitz walkway, whatever they say. He owned Queens. But that's also interesting. In the 60s, Rabbi Belkin wanted to appoint him his assistant. He had a lot of contacts. That area of Queens, Jamaica Estates, very wealthy, would have helped Yeshiva immensely. But by the mid-60s, the students went crazy in YU because he was in a conservative shul. You know what was conservative? There was no mechitza. Otherwise, everything else, but all right, no mechitza. Dr. Belkin couldn't do it. You follow? It was a different mindset already. But that was the Mechita's family. What's interesting is he has many children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren living in Israel. And I'll tell you one story that only I can tell you. In 76, I did basic training. I was 38 years old, but after the Yom Kippur War, they took everyone. You follow? Until then, if you were an American, they didn't want to start up with the State Department. But after the Yom Kippur War, but because I was old, it kept on being postponed until they had a group of guys in the 35 to 39 age range. And finally, I do basic. You read about in Washington. It was an unbelievable experience. And Baruch Hashem, I did okay. So I became very friendly with the chief rabbi of the IDF, Rabbi Gatnavon. A book just came out about his life. I was very, very friendly. We were intimate friends. I get a call from Rabbi Gatnavon a number of years later. Tagidli, Eshlomo Tochnit HaKayit, we have a program this summer where Rabbanim, you know, to create Rabbanim who can serve in the Miluim units, that every unit should have a rabbi. And someone applied named Shlomo Palachek from Rehovot. So I told the Mechit, I told the Rav Gatnamo, listen, I don't know him personally. He told me he's a yeshiva YU graduate, has smicha from the yeshiva. I said, I have a feeling he's the grandson or great-grandson of the Mecha Te'ilui. You take him. I get a call a few months later. Can you recommend anyone else for us? I said, what happened? He said, there was a program. There were guys there, top guys from Panovich, top guys from Chevron, top guys from Mechaz Harav, top guys from Sfat Emet. Who do you think was number one in the program? Shlomo Lipalachek. So that's the major this family. Later in life, I have students from Rehovot. Professor Tarragon moved here when the Weizmann Institute retired him. The other one comes in twice a week, I think he comes in, Charlie Hexter, Dr. Hexter, and they told me he's a gone. I have his firm, he published his firm. He taught there, he's also retired today. He's probably, if I'm in my 80s, he's in his 70s, he's no youngster. That's the major though. let me talk about this about Reb Lazer Silver first. Your question shows me you fellas are anachronistic. You're judging the past by the present. First of all, what is your question? Your question is, how does rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debauched, surreptitious, malevolent, no good, why you guy get interested in Reb Lazer Silver, who founded Agudat Yisrael in America? So first of all, you don't understand. When I entered YU in 51, the split wasn't like today. We knew what was going on in Teir Vadas. Within minutes, it was. We were intertwined. It wasn't like today that the guys were coming from Teir Vadas to YU. Meisim b'chol yom. Once in a while, a YU guy went to Torah Vadas. Yossi Salomon is an example. I write about him in Washington. He's the guy who took me to the Biyana Rebbe, which I owe him a great debt of thanks. Number two, you don't know who Reb Lazer was. Reb Lazer was Agudat Yisrael. He was also Mizrahi. What did he say? Agudat Yisrael is my older sister, Rachi Yangson. The split was not there. Now, Reb Lazer would have become a total Mizrahiite, but his Rebbe, Reb Chaim Heiser, he filled with Derech Eretz for his Rebbe. His Rebbe said, organize Agudat Yisrael in America. What the Rebbe said, he did. But the story of how I got involved is an interesting story. When I was doing my research in Rabbi Revel, I tried to call up some Talmidim who knew Rabbi Revel in the golden period, the 20s yet. So I was told, David, Rab David Leib Silver, your grandfather. So I got in touch with him, and I have to tell you, he and his wife, we became part of the family. I mean, he was makabel of me and helped me and whatever he could make available, papers, correspondence, we became very friendly. Later, his son, your father, marries my Talmidah. So again, that's also a connection. So when the book on Revel appeared, and you have to remember, the book on Revel was a big storm. It changed my life. It brought me to Israel. When I applied to come here, they said, who needs rabbis here? Who needs doctors here? To be a Jewish history, big deal. Oh, a contract with JPS. The encyclopedia came to America to interview me, gave me a JPS. Then you, this is not Art Scroll. This is Jewish Publication Society. The first Orthodox book they ever published. Understand? And I had Mazel, who was the editor then, Chaim Poltak. Chaim Poltak, I grew up in his parents' shul. I mean, Chaim Simon, his younger brother, was my classmate for 16 years. Salanta, TA, yeshiva. Then he went JTS. He died young. Rabbi Sobolovsky, the famous Rabbi Sobolovsky, his mother, she's the youngest child. She's a Poltak. And so I had mazel. So the book appeared and made a big storm. So your grandparents came to visit Israel. Your aunt was living here already. I was at the wedding, actually. It's the first wedding I attended in Israel. I was innate under the chuppah. And Reb Yitzvi Yehuda, behind my back, asked if I'm a shomer mitzvah. I don't have a beard. Little did he know I would become best friends with his brother-in-law and sister-in-law. They were my neighbors, Rabbi Yehoshua Hutnan, Bat Sheva, Zichron and Tzadikim Levracha. I had schut. I knew many, many great people in my life. That's a schut. So he asked me, could I do a work on his father? So I said to him, must be 70, 71. I said to him, a work on your father, that needs a proper doctorate. You know, I have a doctorate in Jewish history. I don't write art scroll. Art scrolling is great. Outside of the historic books, you can die. You know how many letters I've written? And nothing, they say. I once spoke with Joseph Elias. I hope you recognize the name. He said, the chutzpah to say to me, it's not important what the facts are. It's what we want the youth to believe. You say you raise youth to believe sheker. Sheker is sheker. All right. I said, you need a doctorate. So I told them, go to Bernard Revel Graduate School and tell them that I suggested they assign to a young man who has capability, like Bernie Lander assigned me to Revel, assigned. We're in touch all year. Nothing is happening. I write to Bernard Revel Graduate. Garnished mit garnished. So a year later, your grandfather asked me again. I said, look, I can't say no. The man deserves it. How will I do the work? He says, I'm going to Xerox all the archive for you that's relevant. And he did. You see Rabbi Silver sitting there? That's what he's working on. I have in the office the archives. He's publishing about his grandfather more material, because I published the life, but there's Kedushei Torah, there are interesting Shuvat, etc. So that's how the Silver Era came about. You were up all night learning, or Chulvin, which was it?
Looking forward.
When they came back from the first Mishnah Brachas, I remember the Rebbe would always explain they came back late from a Sheva Brachas. And we used to be wise. I said, nein, Rebbe, I'm Gochulavit. You got to know Yiddish to appreciate. Yiddish, as I said in that interview with the OU, it became my native Torah language. I'm a third generation American. Where do I come to Yiddish? But what can I tell you? When I learned in Lakewood, Freddie Zucker convinced me, Zichron Levracha, that Torah was given in Yiddish, and I believe him until today. Follow me? Mm-hmm. I have great-granddaughters-in-law. I have three Persians. I have a Libyan. I have a Moroccan. And that Sidkaniyat, that's all I can tell you. How can I say the Torah is given in Yiddish? But okay, you got to live with your own mishigas. So that's how I got involved with the Silver Era. The reason that Sefer, and if you heard the interview with the OU, so the W. Safir is telling me what the Novominsky said about it. I didn't want to tell him. I know more than you do. I know. What happened was someone was doing research on a topic, and he came over to the Novominsky at an Agudat Yisrael convention. There's a whole group of people standing around. And the Novominsky says to him, did you see Rav Rakefet's work on Reb Lazer Silver? And this idiot says to the Novominsky, oh, Rakefet, he's a YU, you know. The Novominsky got hysterical. I don't want to repeat what he said about me. I got about 12 calls from people who were there. Do you know that Robert Perlow is your biggest cousin? Baruch Hashem. But the reason the word carries so, because it's honest. You follow? That's the exact words that Novominsky said. It's the most honest volume about Torah in America before, you know, World War II and what happened afterwards. Reb Lazer, I had the advantage, like Rabbi Revel, I didn't know them. So I have no prejudice. I saw Reb Lazer twice in my life. I actually saw him with my own eyes. I was a young rabbi, Philadelphia, 1961, and the Velezharov died, Rabbi Pupko. So now there was an opening in the Schlachthaus, the slaughterhouse. And the rabbis are fighting because it's a lot of money involved. So they all agreed Reb Lazer will come, and whatever he says, they'll accept. They signed on it. You follow me? A borei yachid. So all of us went down to Penn Station to greet Reb Lazer. You see this little guy with a big high hat. And he said, you know, I was a kid, I couldn't go near them. Found out later, each one was inviting him to their house. You know what your great-grandfather said? If I take any invitation on Pasul A that I can no longer be a dayan, I took bribe, where's the nearest hotel to where I have to be? And he went to the hotel. Years later, now this is, let's say, 68, I would say, I'm a Rebbe in YU, I'm a Rosh Yeshiva, as they call it, and they're making a dinner in honor of Mr. Abrams, the Menachel HaYeshiva. His father was Lamsha Mashkiach, and they want to bring in everybody, all crowds. So they're having two speakers, Rabbi Dr. Emanuel Rackman and Reb Lazer Silver. This is at the Riverside Plaza, I believe this was. And we all had to go. That's covered for Mr. Abrams. Yeshiva paid for us. We didn't have to pay, but we had a show covered. And I was a young man then. I had energy. I mean, to go teach, go down river, stay in New York, go home to New Jersey. Baruch Hashem, I couldn't do it today. So Rabbi Rackman speaks. Your great-grandfather gets up and says, "A mein Freund, Rav David Rackman, can haben azun, was red English? Can ich eichet red English? If my good friend Rabbi David Rackman in Albany has a son, that Manny Rackman, who speaks, I can all." And your great-grandfather went on to give a pilpul. 24 minutes he spoke in English. The 25th minute where he reached the height, he broke into Yiddish. Like Rav Shach in 1990, if you recall the Agudat. Remember, he gives this whole talk, and when he broke into emotion, he cried in Yiddish. It's like the Rav Tova said about her father. You cried with him in Yiddish, and you laughed with him in Yiddish. In English, you listened to him, but the emotion was in Yiddish. This was Reb Lazer. Now, here you asked a very loaded question. Bunch of wise guys. Who put an end to the Knesset HaGadolah? All right, I may as well record the truth. I never really said this publicly. As someone who loves Torah and loves Torah history, 1980, there's going to be a Knesset HaGadolah. There were two in the 20s. The last one was 37 before in Marienbad. That's where Reb Lazer went. I write about it. Then in Israel, I think it was 54 and 64. And finally in 1980, they're going to have a Knesset Gedolah again. So many years went by since the previous one. What happened is the tragedy we live with, the Machlokes. When the State of Israel was established, Aguda and Mizrahi ran a joint ticket together. A book appeared on Rabbi Teitz, Love Torah, Live Torah, Learn Torah, Love Torah, Live Torah, Mashu Kazah by Rivka Blau. I trust you're familiar with the book. It's a fabulous volume by his daughter, married to my chavruta, Jerry Blau, who I just saw last night. So I wrote to Rivka, "You have one mistake in the book." What was the mistake? She wrote how her mother used to slap her father and keep him from wasting his time going to this political thing. This for zitz and lernen, teach, give the dafyon, you know, the gemara on the radio. Don't waste your time on politics. And she said that her father wasted a lot of time trying to get the Mizrahi and Aguda unified at first election, 49. And her mother yelled at him, and her mother was right. I said to Rivka, "You have only one mistake in the book. in the first election, Mizrahi and Aguda ran a joint ticket. And then what happened. I can tell you the whole story, it's not important now, but the split begins. Rav Chetzkel Sana, was freuen men, why are we so happy? I knew people who heard him, it's the same Chalus Shabbos and the same this. And, then Rav Shach comes on the scene. And Chassidim. The Rebbe. No, you tell me. I just told my wife, we watched the movie on Tisha B'Av, Rav Avram Palm. We have a deep connection to the Palm family. Some of you may know, my neighbor was his brother Charlie. When Charlie remarried, who do you think was Masada Kedushin after his wife died? And I don't have to tell you how many Palms were there, but I was the Masada Kedushin. It tells you our relationship. So, Rav Avram Palm. Very unique individual. Art School doesn't tell the whole story. He went to Yeshiva College for a year. He would have been a YU person. You know why he stopped? The commute from Brooklyn was too hard for him. And his father didn't have the money to put him in the dormitory. He stayed in Brooklyn. So I told Malka, you should know, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe lost his wife, Rav Palm was Menachem Avil. And in Panovich, let me not mention his name again now, he went crazy. Menachem Avil and Apikayu, you understand what I'm saying? This split. Ger, of course, came to the side of Lubavitch. Then you have the Shas split. You go on and on. Well, when I heard there's going to be a Knesia Gedola, you want to hear the whole story? Okay. It's Davi Yadua L'Rabim, but I, you know, as time marches on, it's 41 years ago, I may be one of the few that heard this with his own ears. So I made up my mind, I have to go to this Knesia Gedola. I love Torah history, I gotta be there. How do you get there? 20,000 Gera can't get there. 10,000 Belzer can't get there. How do you get there? Very simple. I contacted Jewish Life. That was the publication of the OU. I'm your reporter. Send me an official document. I then go to the chairman of the World Agudat Yisrael. Don't want to elaborate too much. Make a living, you dress black, wear a beard, etc., what I've seen in my life. But I know this guy because his cousin I know from America. His cousin contacts him. Rakefet is going to show you a letter. Take care of it. It's the covet of Rakefet, the covet of the OU, etc., etc. There I am in the reporter section. Place is mobbed. It's like Madison Square Garden, the Yankee Stadium, that one. And the... the guys, the Sadranim, I know something like it, Gerich Siddim, 6'5" tall, 6'5" wide. If you open your mouth the wrong way, they'll lift you with one pinky and throw you out. So, ich hab sich gemacht, nicht willen, I made myself out like I'm an American. Ani medaber k'tzat ivrit, aber yoter tov anglit. So they thought, what an amaretz, what a boor. They spoke freely in front of me. Rav Shach walks in. Place goes crazy. Half the people are applauding, half the people, let me not say. And one sadran says to another, Eise Ish is hereingekommen jetzt. You know what that means? You know what that, okay. I heard those words. I said, Aaron, whatever name you know yourself by, this is the last Knesia Gedola you will ever see. How many years have gone by? 41. Moetzet Gedolei Torah de Litvakin, Moetzet Gedolei Torah de Chassidim. I know some of the members. Moetzet Chachmei Shas, right or wrong? Okay, so that's your answer. When Mashiach, you know the joke, when Mashiach comes, the first thing he's going to look at the kippah, they're going to look at the kippah, he'll have to wear partially black, sarug, chveis partial streimelech. It's so, you're my students. It is the antithesis of everything I believe in. You understand what I'm saying? If you walk out of here and say, I'm going to dress like Rakefer, you're not going to make me happy. You understand? In this classroom, I can tell you what happened. He's no longer alive. It's 41 years already. Wow, that's 31 years. That's 1990. I was talking about the Rav. So one, and then there was a real swing to the right in YU. Most of the people who came here wore the uniform. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Okay? A real swing to the right. So a young man in the class gets up, Rebbe, you're not being odd. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I was told there he's quoting his Rebbeim in New York. I said, you know what? This is a challenge. I got tapes of the Rav. I set up, we had primitive equipment then, but I still have it in there, the tape recorder. The next 3 weeks, they didn't hear one word of me. It was all the Rav speaking. Well, this guy made a party. He burned his black hat and made a whole party. He's putting on a kid. No, he's like, I'm lucky he didn't throw all of Yiddishkeit away. I had a student threw it all away over the Rav and Reb Lazer when I said the Rav was a member of the first Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah in America, 41. This kid went back to Har Samer, brilliant fellow, Baal Tshuva. Ach, do I suffer? And he told his Rebbe there, the Rebbe, Rakefer is lying. Can a kid went to the public library. I told him, go to the National Library, get the Pardes. I told him to source some silver. He Xeroxed it. He went back. And the Rebbe told him, cannot be, impossible, this is far. Anyway, he today runs a website on atheism. That's where he is so many years later. And you should know, I'm a chutzpan. I wrote to him. And I got back a very nice letter. Good to hear from you, Rebbe. I remember your classes. May the Tsar, God bless the Tsar and keep him far from here. Get the message? That's essentially the... I had that too. I had a brilliant lady student, Michala. If I would tell you who her father was or who she comes from. Brilliant through Kol HaTorah Kula Hawaii. I wrote to her once and twice. She writes back once. Then she my wife writes to her. Then she can't write anymore. God,
how did they manage to put that first that Knesset Gedolah in 1980 together?
The Machlekes wasn't as bad as today, but the fission was there. You follow? Mm-hmm. What happened afterwards? Hashem Yirachem. Don't want to go further. It's a sad story. So now the three different. I can tell you. In Machon Gold, there was a fellow who worked there, a simple Sephardic Jew. And he came, a firm young man, he died young, all these memories come back. So one time he comes into Machon Gold, I taught there 2 mornings a week. This is in Geula, before Geula changed. It was then Mesorati, Dati, slightly Haredi. And he comes in crying. I say, Loma Taboche. And you know what he told me? He saw a Jew pick up Yateid Ne'aman, a Jew, and take a lighter that you use to light a cigarette. He put it on fire and threw it into the waste bin, you know, the collector of garbage, whatever they call them. That's where we stand. So that's the answer. And Halavai, you can tell me there'll be a Knesset Gedolah tomorrow. I'll be the first one to sign up. Okay. No, the Greenblatt brothers, what, there's Nutter and Ephraim. I know. I only knew Ephraim.
Nephew.
That's a nephew. Ephraim's a nephew. I know him from the riverboat Ephraim, but I never met them. My daughter, Taka, Nutter outlived his brother, his nephew.
By many years, still alive.
He's still alive. Should live well. I think he lives in Har Nof.
That was Rivers of Friar.
Because my daughter knew one of the brothers from Har, one of the Greenblatts. I'm done with Parkham. They're Israelis from a car. From what I understand, they came from here to America, They learned by Reb Moshe, and the rest is history. They also lost a portion of money in the Madoff scam. That I remember too, my daughter was telling me, that's sad. Okay, one second, let me see if I answered. I forgot, how did the Rav deal with all the critics leveled against him? All right, interesting two last questions. You're dealing with a delicate issue. On my Rebbe's 10th Yard site, they interviewed me and Professor Yaakov Blitzstein, Jerry Blitzstein, my classmate, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. He was in Be'er Sheva, won Pras Yisrael. I mean, he, very interestingly, had nothing to do with YU anymore. His son is a big Rav today, I think he's the Rav of Ofra. What's the other? Is that Tekoa? One of those two cities, that's his son, who's the Rav there. So they interviewed us, and they asked this very, it was on television, right? They interviewed us for the television. And they asked this very question, and we differed in our answers. I don't think the Rav was really bothered by the criticism. The Rav made a definitive decision to modernize. We're living in the Western world. Remember, the Rav used to say that, could you imagine in 20 years' time, every one of your congregants will not only be a college graduate, but will have a graduate school degree. And to him, this was a reality. He was living in Boston. He organized Maimonides. It was a very different world than Brooklyn, okay? And he recognized, remember the Rav once said, when I get on the plane and the plane takes off to Boston, I feel better. New York, it's like a zoo and so many different animals and so much machlokes. Oh, I go back to Boston, I feel better. And you have to understand, in Boston, who was there? The Rav was there, the Boston Rebbe, and there were Chabad Shluchim. That was Boston. And all these people got along like this. In other words, the Rav with the Chabadnikim and the Rav with the Boston Rebbe. There was never any conflict whatsoever. So I think the Rav was not troubled. He recognized he's in a different world, has a different hashkafa. He was a Mizrahiite. He had come a long way from his days as an Agudist and eulogizing Reb Chaim Moshe Grzyzinski. Remember at the Aguda Convention, 1941, big Agudistim, I think it was Moshe Sherris, said to me, the most extreme Aguda words ever said on American soil was said by your Rebbe. And he's right, if you're familiar with that Hesped, it's classic, classic Das Teira ideology. But the Rav traveled a long way. He found fulfillment in YU. In other words, in Boston, if you know Rabbi Rubin, my Talmud, Rabbi Yitz Rubin, who's my age, and he grew up in Boston, went to Maimonides. So I always quote Yitz used to say, there were two Rabbi Soloveitchiks, the one you knew in Boston and the one you met in the yeshiva. In Boston, there was, Maimonides had classes on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. You know why? So the kids should sit in the sukkah and take a lulav and etrog for a bracha. That's what you were dealing with in Boston at that time. In New York, the Rav could deal with a sugya on lulav and etrog and a Rambam and a Ravid and a Reb Chaim. There he really found fulfillment. And the other side of the coin, why you attracted very brilliant young men. In other words, you take Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. Aaron sat in the Chaim Berlin Beit Medrash. He graduated high school at 14. From 14 to 16, he sat and learned. He went through Shas in the Chaim Berlin Beit Medrash. Then he goes to YU. And he wasn't the only one. There was a whole slew. There was a guy, Yitzchak Haup. Yitzchak Haup, Zichrono Levracha, he was a Teira V'das boy. He came to YU. When he went back to visit Teira V'das and spoke with his Rebbeim and learning, They said about Reb Yitzchak Kalb, Gaten war Yua, but er steigt in Lernen. You understand? The Rav, who gathered around him? You can go one by one, the names of that period. There was Meir Fulda, Manfred Fulda, who just died. These were giants of learning, and they were very law. There was a Gershon Sladowski. I heard he's not well. I don't know if he's alive. I write about him in Washington. I mean, Gershon Sladowski came into the Beis Medrash 9 o'clock in the morning. He left 1, 2 o'clock at night. He learned around the clock. When he went in for Smicha Bechina, it used to be oral, so he goes in, and we young hotshots were outside the door. We're sitting there. We're trying to listen. He goes in, and who's he facing? The Lamsha Rav, Rav Meisher Shatzkes, Mori Urebi Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shmuel Belkin. And he walks out 2 minutes later. So we say to him, Gersh, what happened? Didn't even answer us. Couldn't understand what he was saying. Walks back into the Beis Medrash, opens up, see him again 2 a.m. We found out afterwards, they threw a question at him. He started to repeat the Shach word by word by heart, the Taz. And finally, the Rav says, "No, me alek kenen as du kenst genug. We all know that you know how to learn enough," and they threw him out. I mean, so the Rav found fulfillment. What's fascinating about the Rav is look at his descendants, all types. Moshe Meiselman, you wouldn't call him he's a PhD from MIT. You wouldn't call him a Torah Mada walking product. Yitzi Lichtenstein. But you take Moshe Lichtenstein. Male, each one is a different world. Each one is a different world. So what do you see from that? That the basic commitment of the Rav was learning Torah. Yirat Shemayim, Lithuania, everything else was secondary. And some took it all, some took part of it. And I can tell you, B'didi HaViyuvda, I gave a lecture in Los Angeles on the difference between the Rav and Rav Hirsch. And I developed it very thoroughly, and if you're familiar with my work on the Rav, Volume 2, I consider my translations of the Rav's Yiddish talks on where he differs from Rav Hirsch my greatest contribution to understanding the Rav. And basically I developed it for 2 hours, but the untes de shura, the bottom line, Rav Hirsch felt we must live in the world of Derech Eretz. The Rav may have felt we have to face reality here. But it could be, if we could have a world where we could just sit and learn, the Rav would be in favor. Rav Hirsch would be opposed. And I developed it. Well, the rabbi gave a talk a week later. A kefet is an idiot and a maritz a boor and any yereichikros. I love loving it. I don't argue with anyone. Hazah maritz hab ich nach nicht getreffen in mein ganzer Leben. And he's a prominent rabbi. But you see his descendants, this was the basic message of the Rav, learning is everything. But as I quote him when he talks about his son Chaim and my work on the Rav with Maimonides, everyone complains to me how hard the Maimonides is, and my son complains to me, and we have to do learning and have to do general studies, but what can I do? This is the reality we live today in a big world. Hirsch would never write like that. All right, Baruch Belaber, which, you know I'm talking about, the famous tshuva, it's a Horat Shah. Anyone who's seen Rabbi Hirsch's writings, there's never a word about Horat Shah. Okay, and I'll end off now your last question. I'll tell you what I'm working on. Most of all are the Sheyurim. I feel very bad that the shurim from the 70s and the 80s are lost. Today we have technology. You can pick me up for 30 years already. What I do on Sunday, Shas Paiskim, I think it's unique. But more unique, of course, is what I'm doing Monday, the history of Torah in the United States, which we've already spent 10 years, so we're going to have another few good years to go. This is very important, and it's being recorded. Rabbi Rubin yells at me why I don't write it up. If it can be written up, doesn't it mean that I have to produce new material? So we're doing. I never, this thing in Shlomo LeKalbach, the shir I gave on Klal Yisrael, except you have no idea how many people have kissed me, hugged me. I solve problems for them, because it is a problem. All in all, I stand on what I said. In lo neviim b'nei neviim, fukhizi ma'amadah. All right. With Reb Menashe Klein, you won't believe new material I have on how to treat Goyim. It's a Talmud and covered my eyes toward another Talmud of mine published. And I already read it, but it didn't register that this is right what I'm talking about, and it's a bombshell. All right, let's say that. Writing is... the classes. In addition, I'm going through Shas a third time. I'll say the word by word, Rashi, Rashi, Tosfos, Rambam, Rishonim, etc. That's just to keep in shape. Writing is as follows. I've now written about 220, scribbled about 225 pages. I'm not finished yet, but I'm towards the tail end. What we spoke about, the Rav Yosef Yechav, how do we know Israel is real? How do we know Israel is right? How do we know we're doing the right thing by coming in Aliyah, etc., etc.? And I hold this to be very, very important. And I relate material here that no one really has. Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung. What I have there is it's an absolute bombshell. Now, when I finish with the Ein Banu Smecha, I have from Yehuda Lezer Finkel, the Mira Sheshiva. I have material that no one has called attention to. I have it. I knew the man, Rauchan and Blumenthal. Amazing. So, when I finish that, and I hope I'll be finished by Chodesh Elul, then it has to be, put into a computer program, etc. What I want to do, and this is crucially important, I got a call from Rabbi Lamb's son-in-law, my dear student, Mark Dratch. So Mark, they want to do something in Rabbi Lamb's life. I said, you're either going to do a simplistic volume, or you have to see something is done in Reb Shmuel Belkin, because you can't go further until someone has to... Rabbi Klapman wrote The History of Yeshiva, 1885 to 1915. I wrote 1915 to 1940. No one has written a Rosh book. I have been fighting with Bernard Revel. I could lecture for 2 hours on what I've tried. I got absolutely nowhere. Lehefer, young hotshots, gave me vulgar accounts of YU's history and Dr. Bach. Idiots. Idiots. I said, no, you have to tell the truth. By the 1960s, the burden of Yeshiva College, the fundraising, it corrupted his health. The Reb Shmuel Belkin of the 60s lived on cigarettes, coffee, and liquor. When he was appointed Meir Rosh Yeshiva, I'll never forget, 1960... we're talking about March. Ich bin ein Mamanar Shishiv, etc. Took out a bottle of schnapps and we drank a l'chaim. But that's, it's not that you skip over that, but that wasn't the basic gestalt of the man, of what he achieved. That was an offshoot of the aggravation and the responsibility. So I've gotten nowhere, and I give up, because the dean, the new dean who came in, Bernard Revergrach, who is not even an American, he's English, and he's a philosopher. He knows about Rav Shmuel Belkin like I know about Meir Tzidkun. You follow? It's from the Vitans. So I want to write a memoir. I can't write a scholarly work because I'm prejudiced. You understand what I'm saying? But I want to write a memoir, who he was, give people a feeling. And then about my own relationship with him, because there's some interesting stories that come up that reflect who he was. The chesed he did, his love of the Yudapeyesha, the Litvisha, the koilel he established for the greenhorns who came to America and didn't yet find a place, a role in life. It's the first koilel in America, basically. Maybe Spring Valley there was something. This was why you, the Chippistin, that's Rabbi Reines' grandson, headed it up. And the chesed that the man did. And he was a very interesting personality. I describe him as, he never synthesized the two. He was a Litvishi yeshiva bacha, and a moment later, president of Yeshiva University. And I'll end off with one little story, B'didi HaViyuvda. That is a true story. It's a fabulous story. 1968, there's a guy, Rogozin. There's a school in Ashdod, Rogozin High School. Made a lot of money. Oh, a balabas makes a lot of money. One of his conclusions is that rabbis are not ethical. So he pledges yeshiva $1 million, which was a fortune at that time. Today, everyone living in Israel is a millionaire. You own a piece of property. It's a millionaire. So he pledges $1 million and he's going to YU to establish a postdoctoral program on ethics, rabbinic ethics. Let the rabbis know. So it's going to be headed up by Professor Yitzchak Tversky, and on the 10 people are being chosen, Aaron Lichtenstein is one of them. Yours truly, the top students at that time. We were already on faculty, YU, and we each have to take a topic and write about it, and we're going to get $1,000. At that time, $1,000? It's not today. I'm trying to understand. What was the topic I was assigned? Dina de Malchuta Dina. And I'm going in Aliyah, you know, that's the year we made the decision, I have to finish. And comes the big moment, I've handed in, I'm now meeting with the scholars. Forget about Ari Lichtenstein, forget about Yitzchak Tversky, the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin. And they're discussing my paper, and I'll never forget Rav Shmuel Belkin suddenly starts. His eyes open wide, and he's quoting the Rambam and the Mishnah, the Melech. And he was, sources that I had uncovered, he was now remembering from his youth. And I never forgot. I walked out and I said, that's the real Rav Shmuel Belkin, as much as what he did, beautiful. But he never lost being a Litvisha yeshiva boy. Hand off the story is even more fascinating. Going in Aliyah, I have to revise it slightly, and my parents get in touch with Dr. Tversky, Rabbi Tversky, Tom the Rebbe / Harvard professor, and they say, you know, Arnold is going in Aliyah. He could use the money. He says he'll finish, you'll have within a few weeks everything. So he gave my parents a check for $750. About a year later, I meet him in the shul I daven in for the last 52 years, old Rivka. And I say, Yitzchak, where's the other 250? I handed it in. And by the way, that work on that has been published at least 5 times that I know of. I published it in Tradition, I republished it in Rakafet Aaron, it was republished in South Africa with my permission, it was used in Camp Morishah without my permission, the Aleph Institute published it as the lead article in a book they put out, without my permission. I said, I would gladly give you permission, but have there a cheretz, ask permission, the office alive and kicking. But so Yitzhak says, Arnie, sit down. You know what he tells me? There was a big stock market crash, 69. Rogozin lost everything. He wrote off the whole pledge to yeshiva. He couldn't meet it. He said, you're the only one who got a penny, the 750. So I said to him, Yitzhak, you see, it pays to go an aliyah. Gentlemen, are there any questions? All right, I trust you've gained a little bit knowledge, and I trust all who will listen to the recording that Yomo will upload will also gain a little knowledge. And I need Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu that I'm able to speak in health. Don't take it for granted at my age. And the mind, thank God, is strong. My kneecaps are not, but the mind is. And you can deal with the question, which is more important, your kneecaps or your mind? Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Okay.